Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay and had a good weekend in Kent in the sunshine. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast on Monday, July the 6th. And first today, a mum of two from Deal who was stalked by her ex-partner has told us that she's worried he won't stop after a judge said he was powerless to send him to prison. Hugh Kennedy subjected Vicky Mickford to 4 months of harassment after their 5-year relationship ended. The 63-year-old from Sandown Road has been given a restraining order after repeatedly turning up at her home and workplace. Well, reporter Millie Bowles has been covering the story.
Because you're horrible to me. Oh, that's the reason why I'm the same way.
But it's not true. It's a lie.
It's not a lie.
This is Hugh Kennedy, who has avoided jail after stalking his ex-partner. Vicky Mickford was with the 63-year-old for 5 years, but when she broke up with him, he began bombarding her with messages, following her, and even posted intimate photos of her through her door. In one incident, he jumped up and bashed a CCTV camera outside her house to face the ground. This came after her coming home from work and finding him on her driveway. Vicky then discovered her car had been keyed, costing £1,581 in damage. Kennedy would show up outside her home in Deal and confront her, sometimes following her from work.
Here you are. But don't follow me, you get right up in my head.
I'm just asking you why you actually decided deliberately to...
Because you're horrible to me. That's the reason why I'm the same way.
But it's not true, it's a lie.
It's not a lie. It's what you think is a lie, but it's not a lie.
It's a lie.
It's not a lie.
It's not a lie.
It's not
true.
It's not a lie.
You're being violent toward me. You're being physically violent toward me. You're being physically violent towards me now. You actually you can't accept the fact that you are a narcissist.
I'm walking away. I'm walking away.
You keep telling me.
Yeah.
I'm not walking away towards you.
You're following me.
He was given a suspended sentence and an 8-year restraining order at Canterbury Crown Court.
Thanks ever so much to Millie for that report. You can also read her story in full by heading to the website.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories today, and a man who's in jail for a double murder in Kent 30 years ago is hoping he can prove his innocence through advanced DNA test. Lynn Russell and her daughter Megan were killed in a hammer attack in Chillenden in 1996, and Michael Stone has always denied being responsible. His legal team's calling for a blood-stained shoelace to be analysed again with new methods to try and identify the killer. 3 men have appeared in court over a gang attack in Sevenoaks in which a man's thumb was sliced off. Violence broke out between a number of people in Hatham Green Lane last month. It's claimed a machete-type weapon was used. The men aged 18, 33 and 51 are due at Crown Court later this month. A man who smashed a hotel door and spat at police while drunk in Ashford has avoided jail. Caden Stevens left the receptionist fearing for her safety following the disturbance at the Orbital Park's Premier Inn on New Year's Eve. The 20-year-old, who's about to finish serving a previous sentence at HMP Elmley on Sheppey, admitted criminal damage and threatening behaviour. He's been given a suspended term and ordered to pay compensation. Now, the Kent Online podcast has been hearing more about how Pride in Place funding could be spent on Sheppey. The east end of the island is getting a £20 million cash injection as it's one of Kent's most deprived wards. Local resident Gary Ratcliffe is chair of a board that's been set up to oversee the project. He's hoping it'll help those who need it most and has been speaking to our reporter, Joe Crossley.
The purpose of this project, Pride in Place, is to really focus on those areas in the UK that are in most need, because need can be measured in all sorts of ways. And it's okay looking at data around, income or levels of unemployment, which really are quite stark on the east end of the island. But for me, it's about getting the context when you speak to people as well. And last week, I spoke to a woman who lives on one of the many caravan parks on the east end of the island. And I think that community in particular is often forgotten, because we think of caravan parks often as just there for tourism or for people who are on holiday. But many residents on the Isle of Sheppey live in those caravans and chalets for 10 months of the year. And she was telling me that, you know, it's a great place to live when the sun's shining. But actually, in the middle of November, when the nights have drawn in and it's really dark and cold and wet, that actually that part of the island can be quite isolating. And with really reduced public transport and with fewer shops and fewer services, people often feel really cut off. And it's great if you've got a car, but if you don't, then on a Sunday you can't go anywhere because there's no public transport. And during the week, you know, bus services are irregular, or they are, or they finish early. So the opportunities for people to then get a job that isn't on that part of the island is really difficult. And I think that isn't anyone's fault in terms of, you know, reducing bus services, for example, because there's economics to think about behind that. But there are people there, and there are people that can't necessarily access GP services or other health services, or just go and do their weekly shop. You know, so we've got to make sure that we're using this money for what it was intended, which is actually to make things better for the people in that part of the island. And I think there are things we can do, and I think there are things we won't be able to do. But for the things we won't be able to do, even if it is slightly out of my remit, I'm really happy to advocate and lobby for those other services above and beyond what the Pride in Place funding can do.
Excellent. So what, I know we kind of spoken about meetings already and talking to people. What are things that people want to see the money spent on so far that you've been hearing from? Just, is there any examples that you can maybe, like, is it more buses? Is it X, Y, Z?
Yeah, so there's a common theme around transport and around transport links. There's a common theme around supporting the young people and the youth of the island. There's a brilliant man who works in Sheerness for the youth, in the only youth hub or youth centre that is left on the island. And, you know, he was talking about the fact that, you know, what do you do if you are 15 and live down in Laysdown or in Eastchurch? And how do you access those services? So it's something that's really important for me. And of course, as an educator with 30 years experience, I want to make sure that our young people have the opportunities available to them that maybe their older brothers or sisters haven't had. So there've been lots of ideas around youth services. There've been lots of ideas that aren't going to be feasible. You know, a new swimming pool in the east end of the island isn't something that we're going to be able to spend the money on, because it would probably take all of that money. But there are some really interesting and innovative ideas coming through, particularly around raising tourism, but also benefiting local people. I think one of the interesting things for me is how we can look at some of the wider island projects and how some of those can connect to the east end of the island, whether that's around the King's Coastal Pathway, whether that's around the light railway, you know, whether there's a cycle route that we can get all the way through Warden, Laysdown, Eastchurch, through to Minster, and so on. But I think, again, those ideas have only just started. So I've heard some of the themes that are coming through, but now it's going to be the job of the community engagement officer, as well as me and the wider board, to really tease out even more of those ideas from the local people, to see what they really want. And for me, the important thing here is, I've heard the ideas from the people who have spoken up. So what about the people who haven't spoken up yet? And what about the people who haven't had the opportunity to speak or don't think that their voice is worth hearing? And actually, they're the people I want to hear from now.
Kent Online reports.
A woman's died and another is in a life-threatening condition after a car crashed into a tree near Ashford. Emergency crews were called to the A20 in Sellinge just after 8:30 yesterday evening. The driver, who's 44, is in hospital and the 46-year-old passenger died at the scene. A drink driver's lost his licence and his job after being stopped by police in Whitstable with a crate of beer on the passenger seat of his car. Cheney Court said he'd drunk a couple of Sunday lunchtime pints before getting behind the wheel in April. The 34-year-old from St Patrick's Close in the town has been fined and given a 3-year driving ban. An artist has criticised pet owners for letting their dogs urinate on a sculpture in Deal. Green stains have appeared on the sound mirror artwork by Michael Bennett, which was only unveiled on the seafront in May. He says it's disrespectful, as the bronze piece is a memorial honouring those who died in shipwrecks and aircraft crashes off the Kent coast. A pool and darts venue in Whitstable has been given permission to sell alcohol despite concerns from neighbours. The Arches Club on Oxford Street will be allowed to stay open until midnight on Fridays and Saturdays. People living nearby are worried about potential noise and disturbances, but the owner insists they're not looking to turn it into a bar based around drinking. Now, plans to transform one of Kent's most iconic seafront buildings into a Barbican by the Sea have been unveiled. The Grand on the Lees in Folkestone opened way back in 1903 and has been owned by a group of local residents since 2022. Megan Piper is the Chief Executive Director of Grand Arts CIC.
Ambitions for the Grand were recently described as it being like a Barbican on sea, so with residential apartments above, but performing arts and kind of bar restaurant offer below. I think they're extraordinary event spaces. So, you know, for weddings and birthdays and wakes and, you know, parties, there's an opportunity to for people to come in and kind of create their own experiences and memories here. There's been a cultural program running here for a few years, and I think that the opportunity to really use the cultural program to anchor the building and its offer for the town and to reimagine it in a holistic way. There's nearly 34,000 square foot of space that has the potential to be public. And so earlier this year, Grand Art CIC commissioned architect Howarth Tompkins to do a sketch feasibility study to look at, yeah, reimagining the spaces, looking at how the building could be adapted and how sort of unused spaces could be brought back into active use. Keppel's, which is the bar at garden level, was relaunched in April with executive chef Harry Johnson kind of at the helm. And I think that my hope in 5 years' time is that the hospitality side of what the Grand offers has expanded back into Palm Court. In terms of the cultural programme here, you know, building on what's already happening in terms of concerts and events, but looking at things like, you know, film screenings, looking at kind of small-scale theatre productions and thinking about how we can use the space in different ways. I think the Grand has a really important role to play in terms of collaborations and bringing people together, creating connections with all of the other things that are going on within the town. I think in terms of the size of these spaces and its capacity of roughly 250, it means that we can provide space that, you know, apart from the courthouse, you know, this is kind of quite unique in terms of the capacity side. I think bringing the music room back into use, people are really excited about that in terms of an independent kind of music venue and what that opportunity will look like. And for me, I think having this sort of layered opportunity and bringing live music to the Grand feels really important from concerts to kind of small gigs.
Kent Online reports.
There are plans to turn a former education site in Dartford into housing. The Rosemary Centre has been empty for several years after closing as a pupil referral unit. Before that, it was Wilmington County Primary School. Developers want to convert the Victorian building into 8 flats, as well as building 5 detached houses on the surrounding land. A yellow heat health alert for Kent has been extended. It came into force on Saturday and was due to last until until Wednesday, but is now continuing until Saturday night. Forecasters are predicting temperatures over 30 degrees, which could pose a risk for those who are the most vulnerable. Next, and our sister radio station, KMFM, has started a collection to help tackle food poverty this summer. It's the fourth year they've run the Tons of Tins campaign. Your generous donations will be sent to a number of charities across Kent to help families who are struggling. Andre Jack is from Pie Factory Music, which runs a food bank in Ramsgate.
The demand is severely high to the point where I'm having to turn down a lot of people who call us asking for food parcels because the need for it is just so severe now. It can be very distressing, particularly when you're having to turn people away. You know, some of these are single mums with up to four or five children to feed. Some of these people don't have a home and they're sleeping on the streets. It's pretty damning.
Mayor runs a community support centre in Herne Bay.
These days we have more people who are struggling, who are at work, or we have pensioners who are struggling. We have families with kids who are struggling, and we are talking about people who never struggled before. So we provide, with no questions asked, policies especially for that people who never asked for help before, to give them the lovely and kind approach. None of us know when we will need the food bank. The food banks will be there for you. So today I think the people who can donate, they have to think about it, and it's like a paying forward, just in case you will need it as well later. But when you can help, do help.
And finally, we can hear from Nick Emmerich, who's from Maidstone Homeless Care.
We're short on things such as canned meals at the moment, so things like curries and stews, things like that, they go into a food parcel. We're very short on those. We're short on tinned fruit, we're short on tinned vegetables. A lot of it is just hoping that what comes in from people's generosity helps balance out what we're short for.
Details of how you can get involved are at kmfm.co.uk. And finally, two Kent beaches have been named among the best in England. Dungeness and Botany Bay are on a list of the top 50 by the Times and Sunday Times. They're judged on things like cleanliness, parking, toilet facilities and water quality.
Kent Online Sport.
Starting off with cricket, and Kent have suffered back-to-back losses in the T20 Blast. They were beaten by Hampshire Hawks in Southampton after falling 19 runs short of the host score of 190. It follows a massive 83-run defeat to Worcestershire Rapids on Friday night. In that match, Kent only scored 59 runs before being bowled out. Well, Kent captain Sam Billings spoke after their defeat to Hampshire Hawks.
We're getting into games and then just little things let the teams off when we get on top. So, it's just really frustrating, really. I think definitely a trend of this year, we've lost a lot of wickets. We've been bowled out a couple of times. We've been 8 or 9 down. And that just tells you that you're not batting very well as a unit. So I thought we batted brilliantly up top. We got a great platform again. Then obviously Zach gets out in the 7th over. Then Twanda gets out after the 10th over. Still in a really good position, but then you keep on losing wickets. And obviously, without Joe Denley not being fit, becomes a tough ask, pardon me. Just frustrating, mate, because I think we weren't actually too unhappy with that. We thought it was obviously a good pitch, we'll have to play well, but they only had 5 bowling options, which we know in T20, is a risky thing to do. So, we felt like, especially after the start, that we actually had a really good platform to win that game. But like I said, just frustrating because we just haven't pieced anything together at all this year. And look, mate, like, we just haven't been good enough. We've still got 2 games left to hopefully try and qualify. But I think Essex obviously lost today, so there's a glimmer of hope, but again, we'll have to start relying on other teams now as opposed to our own destiny, which is just a shame because I think we're a lot better side than what we've shown.
On to football, and Gillingham have signed 2 goalkeepers. 20-year-old Lennon McClaug, who's a lifelong Jules fan, was most recently part of Charlton's under-21 setup. He's joined as a backup to new first-choice keeper Ollie Wright, who signed on a season-long loan from Southampton. The 23-year-old spent last season at Accrington Stanley and has been speaking to the club's media team.
Just give us your first thoughts having signed the deal, season long loan.
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely buzzing to be here. It's been a good morning meeting the staff and looking at the running end. We were playing here last year and definitely wanted to come back after playing here, so here I am.
What ultimately made you decide this was the right move for you?
Well, just speaking to the gaffer, really, and Darren, the goalie coach, it really attracted me. The gaffer style of play suits me to a T. So I want to come in and do well for them both, and I'm looking forward to working with them.
Spent last season on loan with Accrington Stanley. You mentioned that you played here, you got experience of League Two. Does that experience help when you do come into something, a new club, a new environment?
Yeah, obviously I'm very thankful to Accrington because they gave me the opportunity to play league football, and this is what's got me the move here. And I'm very fortunate to play a lot of games last year, gain my experience, and now I can bring it to Gillingham.
You mentioned you've met a few of the staff already, including Dale, your new goalkeeping coach. What's the vibe like downstairs?
No, brilliant. I'm really looking forward to working with him. Brings a lot of energy, and I'm looking forward to learn off him as well.
Good character, good personality as well, and he's a good
laugh. I won't big him up too much yet, but no, he seems really good, and I really can't wait to get working with him, and it's going to be a good year. Definitely.
He owes me a fiver for that. So it's not actually long until the lads return. So presumably you're 100% fit, raring to go?
Yeah, I'm ready to go. I can't wait to get started, really, and help climb the table and push for that promotion.
For those fans who didn't see you play last season or haven't seen you play at all, just describe yourself as a goalkeeper. What do you perceive to be your best strengths?
I'd like to say I'm quite commanding. Coming out from crosses and taking pressure off the back line. So I think that's what you'll see me do, and hopefully I'll produce, definitely.
Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. Plus, you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And whilst you're on the site, you can also subscribe to Kent Online Premium. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories.
News you can trust. This is the Kent Online Podcast.